Support for Pop of Culture comes from Stallings Wealth Management, Daniel Stallings Financial Advisor, securities and advisory services offered through Cetera Advisors, LLC, member FINRA/SIPC, a broker/dealer, and registered investment advisor. Cetera is under separate ownership from any other named entity.
This week on Pop of Culture, we dive into the archives.
You know, I was very honored, and I take it seriously. I've known these people most of my life and done shows and things.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a community, you know. Yeah. It really is.
We'll take a walk through last year's Indiana Artisan Marketplace. We'll join a practice with the Ball State Studio Band and hear an essay on life perspective in this week's Beautiful Thing. That's all coming up in this encore edition of Pop of Culture.
Support for Pop of Culture comes from Stallings Wealth Management and from you. With state and federal money eliminated, you are the difference in keeping local programming on the air at IPR. Become a member today at IndianaPublicRadio.org.
From IPR, this is Pop of Culture. I'm Kara Duquette.
And I'm Michelle Kinsey. Our team is a little tired after being live on air last week, so we'll be pulling some interviews from the Pop Archives.
As we speak, many artisans from all across the Hoosier State are gathered at the State Fairgrounds for this year's Indiana Artisan Marketplace.
They're ready to showcase and sell their work all this weekend, so we thought we would step back to our walkthrough of last year's event and the artisans we spoke with. As we made our way into the marketplace, we found some familiar voices, like artist Carol Burke.
Carol, good to see you out here.
Good to see you too.
So the booth is very busy. Can you describe the atmosphere right now?
Yeah, actually the doors open up and it's dead for a while.
Yeah.
And then suddenly people have walked through and they've decided to come back. And so it's been packed.
It is packed. I mean, there's barely room to move in your area. What does it mean to you to be an Indiana artisan, Carol?
Well, it's a wonderful brand to be a part of, and the show here is one of the best venues that I do, so it means a lot to me to be able to continue to make art and sell it. It's wonderful.
Describe the things you have at your booth today.
Well, I have a lot of functional work. I have plates and bowls. I have a lot of sculptural work, and that's been great. Those have gone really fast.
Oh, wow.
I have canisters and miniatures.
What do you hope to get out of participation in the marketplace today?
Actually, some rest. I've been so busy putting this all together, and I spend a lot of time, you know, planning out the layout, and I think I'm just exhausted right now. So,
So today you just get to enjoy meeting people.
Yes, and seeing old customers and meeting new customers.
Yeah. We also found silk artist Carrie Wright, who we spoke with almost a year ago in season one. So can we ask you a couple questions?
You can. I lost my voice yesterday.
You did a little bit.
Carrie has been an Indiana artisan since 2018.
Wonderful. And so talk to me, describe for the listeners, if you will, what you have at your booth today.
Most of my booth consists of hand-painted silk art framed ready for the wall.
Yes.
I do have some wearables as well because people love great hand-painted silk wearables.
Yes.
At an art show especially, so mostly though it's framed art.
What do you love most about participating in the marketplace?
I think my very favorite thing about the marketplace is getting to meet the customer face to face. So much of what we do as artists is done alone in a room. It's very solitary. And so even if people are not buying your art, it is very rewarding to get the feedback and just to get face-to-face with people.
Yes. And I think, because I know I do it, so I know other people have to do it, and you're probably seeing it. People that haven't seen this type of work, there is a look on the face.
Right.
There is the eyes widen and the, you even get audible sounds of, oh my gosh, this is something I've never seen before.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
yes,
which has to be amazing to, you know, to feel that as an artist.
It's amazing and also it's nice and refreshing and sometimes enlightening to get just the general public's reaction to encountering the art.
Yes.
It can be very informative.
Absolutely.
in good and bad ways.
Yeah.
And about then, we were ready for a snack.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Michelle Kinsey. Oh, you're just going to put some candy right in my hand, aren't you?
Heck yeah, y'all.
The man handing us candy was Jay Noel. He and his wife own Abbott's Candies in Hagerstown and Indianapolis.
And you have been in existence how long?
Since 1890.
1890. The oldest candy company.
In the state of Indiana.
That's pretty cool.
And also our building that we're manufacturing candy in was actually built in 1852.
What?
So there's a lot of history to the building that we're in, plus the candy business.
And I'm sure some people listening right now may be like, wait a minute, candy as an Indiana artisan. That's interesting. But Indiana artisan has always included those who do food, candy, beverages, all of those things. Why do you think that's important to include those that are doing things outside what people may consider
art?
Art.
Because if you're looking for gifts, if you're looking for yourself, if you're looking for anything, you're always looking for the best quality. You're also looking for the best value.
Mm-hmm. And as soon as I walked up, you handed me this tasty little nugget. Is this a...
That's a sample of our caramel.
Oh.
Yes, plain.
Listen, it was probably totally inappropriate of me to go ahead and pop that caramel in my mouth, but I couldn't help it. And I'm talking with my mouth full.
That's fine. We approve that.
We're gonna have to end it here because I'm gonna need to stop and savor this.
After sufficient savoring, we spoke to Lethe Piggies, owner of John Tom's Barbecue.
We started in 2006.
Mm-hmm. In a kitchen in Muncie.
Yeah, well, I tell you, it goes further back than that.
Yes.
I actually started trying to recreate my grandfather's sauce in 1998, I believe it was.
Yeah.
And then that went on for like almost 5 years.
Yeah.
And I created this sauce, what people know as John Tom's Original.
Yes.
It's not my grandfather's. I never duplicated his, but this is what I came up with his inspiration behind.
As close as possible. And since then, you've branched out.
Yeah.
So describe what it looks like, what it feels like, what happens in the agriculture building at the Indiana State Fairgrounds during Indiana Artisan.
Oh my goodness. First of all, the crowd will start building. I mean, it gets to a point in here where, like, we can't even take a bathroom break because
yes.
our booth is so, just we're just inundated with people.
Going yes. to the bathroom.
CC's able to get a bathroom break right now, but it'll get a point where we can't get away. And then, you know, this population of people, they appreciate mm-hmm. the arts. I mean, we've created something with our own hands. So it's, you know, you're not walking into a big box store and picking up this stuff.
Yeah.
One thing that stood out at the Indiana Artisan Marketplace is the variety of arts on display. Like previous Pop of Culture guest, rug hooker Tracy Burns.
How does it feel to be at the Indiana Artisan Marketplace today?
Well, it's a little overwhelming. This is my first time here.
Congratulations!
I've been Indiana Artisan since 2020.
Yeah.
So, but this is the first time I've actually had a chance to actually be here as a vendor. So.
Wow. So tell me how it feels like when the doors opened this morning. What were you feeling?
Well, it's taken me a long time to get enough pieces even set up. So it's a little overwhelming. Okay, did I make enough? Did I not make enough? Am I gonna sell anything? Okay, if I sell anything, I gotta make more.
So, I mean, that's a good problem.
Yeah, I'm an artist, right? You know,
yes,
so you gotta make more.
Yeah, exactly. So what are you hoping to get out of your first Indiana Artisan Marketplace experience today?
Well, I teach classes, so if, you know, some people look at it and think, well, I can't really afford that, but they might want to learn how to do it themselves.
Oh, I love that. So you want to share, you know, how you do all of this, how you create all this beautiful art with others. You want them to do it.
Greg Adams makes art from pussy willows.
So where do you get your materials?
Well, I'm a dumpster diver.
Nice.
My wife says I can't do it anymore, but she doesn't always know. But sometimes
it's going to be on the radio.
There you go.
Just make sure she doesn't listen to this one episode.
And it gives you that adrenaline rush to get back out.
Yes, absolutely. Why do you like to be at this marketplace?
Because of the other market. Well, see, this was a group of people who were chosen specifically
for their craft,
to be in this
their art.
Group. Mm-hmm. And it's quite an honor to be
absolutely.
In it. So, you know, I was very honored, and I take it seriously. I've known these people most of my life and done shows and things.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
It's a community, you know.
Yeah.
It really is. The first show they had here was in 13 years ago.
Wow! That's
and
great.
I was fortunate enough to win Best of Show that year.
The first year out?
And I cried.
Well, but, oh, I love that. But I
being an Indiana artisan
like
meant
some,
something different to each artist we spoke to. But there was one word they all used to describe the feeling here, community.
Michelle, it sounds like you had a great time speaking with all the artisans at last year's Indiana Artisan Marketplace.
You know, I did, Kara. There were so many people representing this area. It was wonderful to see. This year's event is this weekend at the State Fairgrounds in Indianapolis. Michelle Kinsey.
And I'm Kara Duquette. You're listening to Pop of Culture. The Ball State Studio Band is busier than ever with their lineup of spring shows. So we thought we would look back at when we joined in on one of their practices in season two.
You're hearing the Ball State University Studio Band, and joining me is Cassius Goins. He is the director of the Studio Band here at Ball State, and he is also associate lecturer of music, specializing in jazz percussion, right?
Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit about the Studio Jazz Band.
Okay, so the Studio Band, it was started 2017, 2018 by my colleague Christoph Thompson, Dr. Mm-hmm. Thompson, who is the head of our music, media, and production program here at Ball State. And it was a much smaller outfit than what we have now. It was more like a combo setting, so 5 to 6 students. And they performed out in Muncie and surrounding areas as well, but only like a few times a semester or a year. It's grown a lot since then. Our program has grown, so to keep up with our program and the demands of the students, so has Studio Band.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely been a glow up of the Studio Band because it seems like I'm seeing the names show up all over the place on social media. Performances at the Jazz Kitchen,
yes.
Performances in town at Be Here Now, private events, fundraisers, galas. I mean, it's all over the place. Why is this so important for the students?
It's so important because it's giving them the necessary tools to be professional musicians in the music industry. So it's giving them the tools. They not only know how to play their instruments mm-hmm. and do it well, they're learning tons of repertoire. So everything from Stevie Wonder to Bruno Mars to Ariana Grande. We do classic soul, funk, R&B. And myself being a musician that's still actively performing every week, multiple times every week, I understand what it takes to kind of be a professional musician. Mm-hmm. And you have to wear many hats. I tell my students it's not a straight line, you know, being a musician.
Yeah.
So you could get a call to play for a pop group. I got a call to play for a Motown group in a couple weeks.
Wow.
So you never know what you're going to be playing. So I like to have my students be prepared to take those opportunities when they come along. So it's really giving them the tools to do that. But also the other side of the music business, being a professional and knowing how to book gigs, knowing when to show up, knowing how to run a rehearsal, knowing how to run sound. So we set up every day, our PA system and our mics and everything, and all of the students have a hand in that. So they're getting a little bit of everything so that they're well-rounded when they get done.
Yeah. It's one thing to be in the classroom or be in kind of a studio session at Ball State. It's another to go out and perform in a variety of different venues. I think that's awesome.
This is a hands-on class, a hands-on ensemble. So
absolutely, absolutely. I noticed you in rehearsal. You have the biggest grin on your face. Talk to me about how you feel watching these students kind of gel as a band to improve as they go along. And really, I mean, I noticed just in this rehearsal, the stage presence, the audience banter. I mean, they've got that stuff down. How does that make you feel as the director?
I mean, it makes me feel great. You know, it's all about them at the end of the day. So to watch them kind of blossom into their own and to get better as the semester goes along and to watch their camaraderie between each other as well, it's a beautiful thing.
Elijah Neal, and he is one of the vocalists with the studio band. Elijah, we just heard you perform some of the tunes that you're going to be performing out and about in concert. First of all, you sounded amazing.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Tell me how you got involved with the studio jazz band. Why was this something you wanted to be involved with?
So when I originally came to Ball State campus as a vocal performance major, and granted there are a lot of amazing staples in classical music, but that was all I was doing. And as a vocalist who grew up in church singing gospel, R&B, jazz, like that's my base. Like that's what I love to do. And so at first I wasn't really well versed in the ensembles on campus my first year, but second semester I got to see studio band perform at one of like the collective performances, and I was like, I have to get on stage and do it. And so at the beginning of my sophomore year, which is this year, first semester, I came in on audition, they let me in, and it's just been the most amazing experience getting to do the style of music that I've literally been craving to do.
Time out. So you this is your first year with studio band?
This is.
Oh my goodness, you seem like a veteran. You seem like you, I thought you were gonna say, oh, I'm a senior and I've been with the studio
no,
band
I'm
for
just a second year. I'm only 20, years. I'm only 20.
Oh my goodness. What is your favorite part about being in studio band?
All in all, just the creative space to create. Like it is so healing to be able to do a style of music built by vets who created it for people like me. So I just like, it is such an amazing experience to get to do that with like-minded people who also just love to jam out professionally. And it's really fun.
Yeah. How important is that as a student to be able to get these experiences, real, like you said, real professional experiences while you're still in class?
Absolutely. So yeah, like with class, like, class is so like stressor. And granted, I am very grateful for the opportunity. I'm also a first gen student, so I'm very grateful to be here representing my family in my hometown, Gary, Indiana, Goji. Studio band is my de-stressor. It's my time to relax and create and make music and kind of built this and practiced this portfolio that I'm going to be putting out by the time I'm an upperclassman and wanting to do internships and crazy other places and stuff. So yeah,
absolutely. So as you look through, because the band has quite a repertoire, as you look through there, what are some of your favorites on the list?
For me personally, one of my favorite songs to sing is Say Yes by Floetry. It is a very just like sensual, fun song, and I personally don't get to sing in my falsetto much, so I get to kind of unlock this more like feminine, nice, sultry side to when I sing, and I just love that song so much. She's crazy. She like moans like yeah, in the yes, song, like yeah, she goes crazy. But my favorite song, like to hear song, is Pretty Wings. Luke sings that song. He's the other male vocalist mm-hmm, in our group, and he just, ooh, his voice is like, it's literally, it melts. I melt. Wow. I melt every time he opens his mouth. So yeah, Pretty Wings, when he sings that, I'm just in awe.
Wow. Now, since you just joined Studio Band, do you understand, can you comprehend how huge it is that the band is playing at the Jazz Kitchen?
My mom is a singer. That's where I get my little yes, singing quirk from.
Yeah.
And her sisters are performers, and they know artists that have gone to Jazz Band because they're based in Ohio. So they know artists that have performed at Jazz Band. So when I told them, they were freaking
out. Jazz Kitchen,
you mean? Oh, yes. Yeah.
That's right.
Thank you. Jazz Kitchen. And like, they were just like completely geeked for me. Like, I tell my parents not to like travel out 3 hours from where to like go, but they were like, we are on it. We bought tickets.
Yes.
Like, I'm so excited. So I've like, I've been in a practice room almost every day. Like, I cannot forget a lyric. I cannot miss a beat. Like, this is one of the biggest like performances that I'll be doing like ever.
Well, I think we're going to see you a lot in the coming months Studio Band and then beyond. I look forward to see what you do post-Studio Band.
Because
I'm telling you what, it's amazing.
Thank you guys so much.
Involved with the Studio Band? Is it an audition situation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Studio Band is an audition-based ensemble. We normally hold auditions the first week of the semester in the fall. Mm-hmm. So we've had quite a few students audition. Me and my colleague, Dr. Thompson, we sit through many hours of listening to the different instrumentalists and vocalists come through and audition, and then we kind of narrow it down and we make the group from there. We normally have 5 vocalists, 3 horns, 2 drummers who trade off. One plays drums, one plays percussion, 2 guitars, bass, and keys. Yeah.
That's awesome. Do you hear from graduates that are still doing it, you know, and about their experiences they had
Absolutely.
With Studio Band?
And that's a good point to bring up. We do hear from graduates and alumni, and we have an alumni of the program, Cambria Moncrief. She's coming back to perform with us at the Jazz Kitchen.
Nice.
She's going to be our guest artist. So she was a student here. She's a graduate of the MMP program, and she was in Studio Band when it first started. She's one of the founding members.
An OG.
So yes, it's going to be great to have her come back and see how it's grown since she's been away and graduated.
That's awesome.
So it's going to be wonderful to have her come back.
Yeah.
It's kind of a full circle.
You can't have a better testimonial than that. Somebody actually moving on and doing that and then some. And how wonderful that she wants to come back and still share her talents. In case people are not aware, tell them why the Jazz Kitchen is such a huge thing for this group to be able to perform. This is the place where all of the jazz R&B greats perform on a regular basis, and you are on the calendar.
Yeah, so the Jazz Kitchen is the premier jazz venue in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
And I've seen so many world-class Grammy-winning artists grace that stage. So it's really special for us to be able to do the same thing, and especially for the students, you know. A lot of the gigs we've played, it's their first time, like, performing outside of a school environment.
Wow.
So to go straight to like the jazz kitchen.
That's like 0 to 60 2 seconds.
Really, really cool thing. And you know, the Jazz Kitchen, everybody, the staff, David Ali, the owner there, they're all great people, very much involved in uplifting the musicians and the community in Indianapolis. So that's a wonderful thing as well.
Well, congratulations on the success of Studio Band. We look forward to seeing you out in the community.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Oh,
That interview was from Season 2, Episode 8 in 2025. This is Pop of Culture. I'm Michelle Kinsey. And I'm Kara Duquette. The Pop team took the week off after last week's 100th episode live celebration.
Woohoo!
So we're looking back over the last 100 episodes to some of our favorite Pop moments.
And speaking of celebrations, the Academy of Model Aeronautics is celebrating its 90th year with its annual National Fun Fly June 25th through the 28th.
Our producer, Luke Jones, spoke to the directors of the event back in season one.
Hi, Luke. I'm Steve Haston. I'm the director of the foundation here at the Academy of Model Aeronautics.
I'm Rachel Hahn, Academy of Model Aeronautics Foundation donor and program specialist.
And I'm Kyle Jarris. I'm the education director here at the Academy of Model Aeronautics.
Excellent. And we've got you all here to talk about this National Fun Fly event that is this coming weekend. But before then, some folks might not be aware that the Academy of Model Aeronautics, known as the AMA, is actually headquartered in Muncie. Can you talk a little bit about what the organization is and what the connection to Muncie is?
Yeah, certainly. So Kyle Jarris here. The AMA has been around as an organization, actually, since 1936. And what we focus on are pretty much anything that flies that doesn't have a human inside of it. That's our bread and butter. It's what we enjoy doing. And we do that as a hobby. We also have lots of different sporting elements that go along with that. And then even potential careers that utilize those kinds of aircraft in the national airspace. And as part of that goes, we work very closely with organizations like the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, for those who might not know, as well as lots of other partner organizations like NASA, who you've probably heard of, the EAA, Experimental Aircraft Association, and several others to really celebrate flight and the opportunities to enjoy aviation.
Nice. So what exactly do you do at your headquarters in Muncie? And I know there's also the museum attached, or not attached, but within the same general area.
So I will tell you, when AMA was founded, it was actually founded in Washington, D.C., and then it later moved to Reston, Virginia. And then in the early 1990s, it moved here to Muncie, Indiana, out here by the bypass on East Memorial Drive. They moved us out here because they thought it would be a good centralized location for our members. We have members all over the country and also in some foreign countries. And they felt like this was a good property and a good space for them to all kind of meet together, to fly together. Here we do all kinds of different things. We have our foundation here, of course. We have education department here. We have a membership department. We have about 195,000 members. We have a publications department that produces a monthly magazine, a print magazine, and a digital magazine that goes out every month. We also have a government relations department, or government affairs department, that is often in Washington, D.C., meeting with officials there who make decisions basically and rules about model aviation and other unmanned or uncrewed aircraft. And then also across the drive here, we have the National Model Aviation Museum that has thousands of artifacts. I've been told the first artifact dates back before the Wright brothers' first flight. So it's pretty, wow, pretty old. We have, in addition to airplanes and propellers and motors and engines, we also have a whole library of model aviation resources that people can come and visit and get photocopies of and read through.
In other words, there's a lot to see. Make sure you come out and visit. And, you know, that's kind of what we're here to talk about, which is the upcoming National Fun Fly for the community. And we're really excited about that event.
Yeah. Perfect segue, Kyle. Tell us all about it. What is happening? What is there to experience this weekend?
Yeah, Luke, this is Steve. And we're very excited about the National Fun Fly. This is a annual event that we host out here at the AMA. And this year, our 1,100 acres are open to the public. It's a community event. And it's really designed to inspire the youth and the other folks in the community all about aviation and other STEM avenues. As Kyle mentioned, many of these folks move into career paths that have shaped the entire face of aviation and spaceflight across the world. So this year, at the front of the Academy of Model Aeronautics, we will have a RC boating happening on our pond. We have a speaker series where we have women in aviation coming in, and we have some other professors who will talk to visitors about STEM and how aviation impacts the youth and the future. We also have drone demonstrations, and we have drone racing league will be at the museum site as well. And then from there, as you move back to our site, what we call site one, we'll have RC aircraft. And that is, we call it buddy boxing, but a person, anybody, a youth or an adult, can take control of an airplane and actually fly it in the comfort of a pilot's hands, who can take control if something something were to go on.
That sounds like the kind of flying I would need to do.
Well, I mean, the idea is to take away some of the stress that's associated with learning to fly model aircraft.
Yep.
And also just trying out ground vehicles, RC boats, as you mentioned. Yeah. There's going to be rocketry happening on site, as well as free flight models to both build for youth and then participate with, fly, enjoy. And I don't know if we've mentioned this yet, but free of charge, like absolutely no charge to our community members. Like, we want to celebrate aviation, and we see ourselves as a great channel for those aviation, whether it be the hobby, the sporting elements, or a future career in aviation. So,
yeah. And on that, for the folks who are coming who aren't AMA members, or maybe they're a fan of actual, you know, passenger planes, what do you hope that they learn when they're at National Fun Fly this weekend?
I hope, number one, that they have fun and relax and enjoy themselves. Yeah. That's my hope. But I also want them to see the connection between the hobby and full-scale aviation. We have some members who are astronauts, who work for NASA, who designed aircraft that fly on Mars. I mean, that everything in the hobby is related basically to something full scale. So I want them to see that, and the fact that if they started in model aviation, that might to lead to some kind of career in aviation, aeronautics, or engineering.
I love that answer. What about you, Steve? What do you hope for?
I want the parents to see that by supporting their kiddos, that there's a tremendous number of opportunities in it. And it's a hobby and a sport that can lead them into, hands-on experiences and get away a little bit from, you know, the everyday drudge of being on a device and doing things like that.
Yeah, I really love that I hadn't thought of this. It's a tangible way for youth to see an opportunity in a STEM field. They can touch it, they can feel it, they can see something fly or motorboat on a pond, and it can spark that enthusiasm.
Definitely. And that's really what we're here to do, is spark that creativity and that imagination, and do so in a way that's accessible. You know, you don't have to spend tens of thousands of dollars and get your private pilot license and start there. You know, there's easier ways to access the skies.
Wonderful. All right, let's get the event details down. I know it's this weekend, Friday the 28th through Sunday the 30th. When and where can people come out and find you?
Yeah, so the event is a three-day. The main community event for local folks is on Saturday, June 29th, and we're going to have the property open from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., the entire 1,100 acres and events at all those sites. And as Kyle said, it's free of charge.
We're going to have shuttles with free transportation across the site. So if you need to go from one activity to another, you're welcome to hop on one of our shuttles.
And can I jump in really quick and
share? Of course.
If you go to modelaircraft.org /funfly, that should get you to our website, where you can read all about the different activities that are happening. We've barely scratched the surface. This is truly going to be a celebration of all things aviation.
We spoke to Kyle, Rachel, and Steve in Season 1, Episode 22.
If you're a recent listener of Pop of Culture, you can find all of our previous seasons on the NPR app, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and IndianaPublicRadio.org. We're everywhere.
I'm Kara Duquette.
And I'm Michelle Kinsey. Instead of our usual What Are You Working On segment, we're looking back at an essay by H.K. Hummel from Season 2, Episode 23, for this week's Beautiful Things.
Today we have a visit with writer H.K. Hummel as part of our ongoing series of micro-essays entitled Beautiful Things. H.K. is joining us from Little Rock, Arkansas. Is that correct?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having me.
We're happy to be here with you today. And HK is going to share with us your beautiful thing entitled, It Seemed Like Everything Was Still Before Us.
It seemed like everything was still before us. I crack an egg against the edge of the bowl while thinking about the bistro I worked in when I was 19. I wore corduroy pants, Doc Martin Mary Janes, and hand-sewn peasant blouses. I wrote poems on the order pad I kept tucked in my apron. I liked stepping out into the hot night and bicycling home under the streetlights. While students loitered over their books at the cafe tables, a boy named Adam taught me how to spin the batter on the griddle. While I practiced, he slouched against the counter and talked about his role in a streetcar named Desire. For weeks, I spun crepes in my dreams. I perfected the flip and fold, learned the menu on the sly, neatly plated the Coco Vin Blanc. The manager discovered what I could do and made me a cook. That spring, the restaurant clamored with life. Ruddy-cheeked Joe sang madrigals as he wiped counters. Olivia, a punk with hair as black as motor oil, would snort and roll her smoky eyes at the boys. Everyone had someone to be. Now, I slide a crepe in front of my daughter and remember a dawn morning sugared with the scent of pastry and a single kiss. There was something simple about the way we lived. If we were hungry, we ate. If we wanted something sweeter, we made it sweeter.
That was It Seemed Like Everything Was Still Before Us. HK, thank you so much. That is lovely. What a lovely piece of remembrance and capturing a moment in time. Can you tell us what inspired this piece?
This essay is based on one spring when I was young. I think I was 19 or 20. And I think it was, sort of maybe both springs mushed into one.
And that is an age, definitely, isn't it?
Right. So I was just thinking about who I was then and how it's not so different from who I am now, but also quite different in some ways.
Yeah. And that all of us contain both who we are now and who we were then, right?
Yes, absolutely.
There's the line that really jumps out at me and sort of, causes that lovely punch in the gut for me is everyone had someone to be, right? Mm-hmm. It's not the usual thing we hear, everyone had somewhere to be. This is everyone had someone to be, right? So this idea of thinking about our future selves and who we think we're going to be, who we want to be, and how that then infuses our remembrance, right?
Definitely. I think what also was just amazing was that, we all were so emphatically ourselves And yeah. I knew it at the time, and I can still see it now, mm-hmm. just how much we had just embraced who we were, even if it was only, you know, like having a glimmer of what that, the potential for that was. Like we were completely and utterly ourselves. And that was wonderful.
Yeah, the imagery in particular of the Doc Martin Mary Janes, the hand-sewn peasant blouses, and then your friend Olivia, who was punk rock. That, I thought actually specifically of people I knew back then, very similar, as well as my own self sort of in that melange of expression, right? Figuring out who you are through not only the people you're with, but also some of the choices you make in your life.
Mm, yeah.
I also love the idea that you are sharing this with your daughter, right? As you make a crepe, as you put it in front of her and think about who you were then. That also resonates with me deeply as a parent. Right, the sort of strange combination of wanting your kids to see you as a parent, but also the fact that you're a human being, right? Yeah.
Well, I think the funny thing was, I'm sure that particular breakfast was unremarkable. Sorry,
right,
it was just
yeah.
normal breakfast. But in my mind, you know, my mind was sort of time traveling as I was making breakfast.
Yeah, and that's just perfectly captured in this short essay with a beautiful specificity and just a moment in time, which is great. Do you know about anything that happened to any of these folks that you spent time with those springs?
No. I wish I did.
But, yeah.
Know, it was a long time ago, so I've lost contact with all of them.
Of course. Yeah, and I think about that too a lot of you know, the travels that I had as a early, you know, in my early 20s, and a lot of the peoples I encountered, a lot of the folks I encountered. And in this time, what's so interesting is it's much easier to keep in touch with people, right? And yes. I know that my own kids, for example, are in touch with so many different people that they've met over the course of their lives. And yeah. I'm curious how that is going to evolve for them as they get older.
It's a really interesting question. Yeah, I think that's partly just so generational that, you know, like, you know, I didn't have a cell phone when I was
right.
in college.
Yeah.
I had barely had email at that time, right? And so it was just a completely different sort of reality, I think.
Yeah, well, what a gorgeous way to spend some time thinking about this moment in your life and how it I think inspires all of our listeners to think about times when it might have been, as you say, unremarkable, but really those moments as they come together to form a life are what are in fact remarkable.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, HK. I so much appreciate your time with us today. And your beautiful thing. H.K. Hummel is a writer in Little Rock, the author of Lessons in Breathing Underwater, and the forthcoming second edition of Short Form Creative Writing. And we're so grateful for your time today. Thank you.
Michelle, are you ready for our favorite part?
The arts calendar. Let's do it.
Okay. The Anderson Symphony Orchestra will present Divas of Pop and Soul Saturday, March 28th at the Paramount Theater. This evening will celebrate the legendary women who shaped the worlds of pop, soul, and R&B, featuring the music of Whitney Houston, Tina Turner, and other iconic artists. The concert begins at 7:30 p.m. and will feature special guest vocalist Sierra Harper.
Our Town opens this weekend at Guyer Opera House in Louisville. Our Town is a Pulitzer Prize-winning 1938 play by Thornton Wilder that depicts life in the fictional small American town of Grover's Corners. It's an exploration of love, friendship, and the beauty in ordinary life. GuyerOperaHouse.com has more info.
The West Wind continues its run at Muncie Civic Theater this weekend. The final show on Sunday, March 29th. This is an original play written by Muncie residents John and Jenny Marsh that rides the rails across turn-of-the-century America. MuncieCivic.org has details.
The John Beatrice Band will celebrate the 10th anniversary of John's album Farmland Famous Friday, March 27th at the Farmland Community Center. The music begins at 7 p.m.
Also on Friday, March 27th at Rojo's in downtown Muncie, you can hear Alfie Jean and Fella Jack perform beginning at 7 p.m. Andrew T. will be there Saturday night. Newcastle's Twin Lions Wine Bar will present an uncorked comedy night at 6 p.m. Saturday, March 28th. And The Fierce, full disclosure, Michelle is a member of the band with special guest K-Dog, will perform at 7 p.m. at Room 5 Piano Bar in Muncie.
On Saturday, March 28th, the David Owsley Museum of Art at Ball State will host a community chat about the book Bite by Bite, Nourishments and Jamborees. It's part of Muncie Public Library's Big Read effort, which encourages communities to come together through the shared experience of reading and discussing a great book. The conversation will begin at 2:30 p.m. Learn more about Big Read and how to pick up your own copy of Bite by Bite at MunciePublicLibrary.org.
Minnetrista Museum and Gardens is offering a Ukrainian egg dyeing workshop at 1 p.m. Saturday, March 28th. Join Carol Powers to learn the centuries-old art of Ukrainian wax-resist egg dyeing.
Bob Dylan will bring his Rough and Rowdy Ways tour to Emmons Auditorium at Ball State on Tuesday, March 31st. And yes, that Bob Dylan. The concert begins at 8 p.m.
Thursday, April 2nd is the first Thursday in Muncie. Look for new exhibits, browse downtown shops, catch some original music, and more between 5 and 8 p.m.
Our own Maya Doss will be the featured artist in the Muncie Civic Theater lobby, hosted by the Muncie Arts and Culture Council. Nice. And next Saturday, April 4th, is the Magic City Sip and Savor event at Majax in Muncie. The event will include tasty beverages, makers, music, food, and much more. Send your arts and culture events to us at indianapublicradio.org/contact, then click Pop of Culture.
Support for Pop of Culture comes from Stallings Wealth Management and from you. With state and federal money eliminated, you are the difference in keeping local programming on the air at IPR. Become a member today at indianapublicradio.org.
And that's our show. Our fact checker and ethics curator is Stephanie Weekman.
This week was produced by Andrew Montavon, who thought it would be a good idea to give Luke a break after every 100th episode.
Don't worry, we still had production assistance and plenty of exchanged emails from Luke Jones.
Our audio fellow is Maya Doss, and our show was hosted by me, Kara Duquette,
and me, Michelle Kinsey. Pop of Culture is a production from IPR on the campus of Ball State University.